Are you looking to support farmers? Well, this episode might just have a way for you to do that. This is Talk Ag to Me. Hello and welcome to Talk Ag to Me, the podcast dedicated to improving ag literacy around the globe. I'm your host, Brendan Black, and in today's episode, we're talking to the co-founder and COO of Harvest Returns, Austin Manis. Now, I'm going to let Austin give his own introduction in the episode, but essentially, Harvest Returns is a company that's focused on getting more money in the pockets of farmers, and not just in terms of benefiting their businesses, but in terms of getting investors, people who are able to support agriculture from the outside and give them the financial needs that they may require in today's economy. And there's a lot more complexity to it than that. There's a whole story behind why this company exists, but that's the high and low of it. So I want to give you guys that chance to go check that out in the episode. But before you do, make sure that you like, you comment, you subscribe, you follow, do all the things. And as we always say, don't just share this online, but share it with your friends and family around the dinner table. And again, the Patreon is there if you'd like to donate. It's by no means obligatory, but it is always appreciated. That being said, real quick, just wanted to update you guys. I did go to Washington and do the Farm Bureau experience, talk to their promotion and education committee, and it was an excellent experience. I hope to talk about it on an episode soon, but it wasn't enough for me to make a lot of content off of, so I didn't really update you guys as I was going through that, but we'll talk about that on a later date. For now, let's get into the episode.
Sure. Thanks, Brandon. So I'm Austin Manis. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Harvest Returns, also the co-founder. My business partner, Chris Raleigh, and I started the company back in 2016, and our main goal was to connect investors with quality ag offerings, agricultural companies, farms, ranches, ag businesses. And so that's what we did. We started our crowdfunding platform to get going back in 2017. And then, we've been raising money and distributing money to investors and helping farms and ranchers ever since. So it's been a good time.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that sounds great. And this idea of Harvest Returns is really interesting. I was doing some research on your guys' website yesterday and learned a lot more about it. And I learned a little bit about your story, but would you mind sharing a little bit about how this whole idea came to be?
Sure. So I grew up country boy in the Southeast. I came to Texas A&M a million years ago for my undergrad and then ran straight into the Army. This is, you know, back during the early days of the Iraq War and Afghanistan War. My co-founder, Chris, was slightly older than I am, but I've known him since those undergraduate days and just stayed in contact with him. He's a Navy veteran. And so we had obviously a lot to talk about and, you know, old family friends. And in 2016, Chris had started to branch out his investment portfolio, and he really wanted to get into the ag space. And he noticed, you know, this is kind of difficult if you're an investor to get in the ag space. You got to either buy your own farm, which could be billions of dollars. You can get involved in, say, an ag fund or a real estate investment trust, something like that. But the minimums to get in that was like $100,000, $250,000 as an investor. And so if you were a person that had $5,000 or $10,000 to diversify your portfolio into the alternatives, because, you know, what we consider ag to be in, you know, you really didn't have a whole lot of options. And so Chris had started to seek out that. And so he reached out to me in, let's say, summer of 2016, and said, "Hey, I've got this idea." And so, of course, I came a running, and we noticed that the crowdfunding space in any industry, specifically real estate, was really taken off after it became legal back in from the Jobs Act of 2012. And so the real estate was seeing, you know, very great success in the crowdfunding space. Other kind of startup companies, and you think of things like Kickstarter and StartEngine and Realty Mogul, crowdfunding platforms, like they were really seeing some success. And so we noticed that no one was doing it in the ag space. And, you know, here's an industry that since mankind's been around, but yet there was no, you know, direct connection with this, you know, innovative financing style. And crowdfunding realistically is, as I like to say, you're electronically syndicating a private placement, which people have been doing that for decades in the United States. But here we are, like, let's tie this innovative financing style to an industry that I don't needs every single human on the planet. So that's kind of what the idea got started. And so we went through every thing that startup company goes through lots of research, lots of calling people and talking to people, a lot of trial and error. You know, kind of like Edison said, you find 10,000 ways to not produce a light bulb. You know, so we went through that, and we found the right partners, and we found the right team members, and we built this platform. And so we started, you know, reaching out to the ag space saying, hey, who is needing capital? Who's willing to take a chance on this process? And then we also started reaching out to investors. So we kind of have those two customers and said, hey, who is looking for a solid ag deal? Here's one or two or three we found. You know, tell me what you think about it. And so people started putting their money where their mouth was. And we started to fund some deals, smaller at the beginning and then growing from there. And so we pushed out, say, 30 plus million dollars to different farms and ranches, small, medium, across the country and internationally. And we've pushed back almost $10 million to investors and distributions. And so this thing works, like we've shown it works. And so, and then we saw, you know, we definitely saw some competitors pop up, which is great for the industry to find, you know, farmers and ranchers can find capital from multiple sources, which is always healthy. And so we felt pretty good when you see that validation, like, hey, there's some other people thinking the same thing that we're thinking, and they put their money and their efforts into it as well. So we were happy to see that. But that's kind of how the journey that's got us here today.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite the story. So you mentioned you've been around since 2016. So how have you seen this company change over the past 7 years?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, Chris and I were the two guys with a spiral notebook, you know, in a garage somewhere. And got an office, and we hired the first team member, and then we hired the second team member. You know, just the people have been an amazing part of this journey, finding those that are talented and are also like, you know what, I'll take that risk. I'll join a startup company and see where it goes. So that's been a great opportunity. We started with Chris and I, and now we're up to, we've got seven of us total, with quite a few other partners out there that we call on as needed. So the people are one of the favorite parts of this business. And then, of course, the technology side of it, there's always a new thing, you know, in the tech world, especially fintech, seeing things come in, you know, with cryptocurrencies and secondary markets and this whole FTX debacle. And I mean, just name it, in the finance world, there's always something going on if you're nerdy enough to follow the finance stuff like we do. And then in the ag space, man, that just learning, you know, and I grew up in the country, and I remember going to farmers markets and helping my aunts and uncles sell their corn and watermelon at the farmers, state farmers markets. And here we are talking with like tractors that drive themselves and sensors that can tell if a cow is upset by its temperature. I mean, just unbelievable, like the technology that's out there. And then you talk to an aging industry, and I say aging as in, you know, the average farmer in America is kind of, I think it's 60 plus. And there's a new generation of young people that are interested in this, and they're interested in where their food comes from. They're interested in how it's produced, not just what's produced and how much of it, but they're very particular about, you know, what kind of processes are used to produce that food. So seeing that interest bloom, you know, over the last 6 years and learn more about it, it's just been fascinating. And from my roots to where we are today, it's a quite a different landscape out there, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine. And that kind of leads into my next question there. You mentioned that you grew up in kind of a rural area, and you know, helping out your grandparents with the farmer's market and all of that. Did you and Chris have much of an agricultural background or experience going into this, or was this kind of a new, an uncharted territory for you?
Well, Chris's background, I mean, he self-proclaimed was the concrete cowboy of Dallas. You know, he's the guy that grew up in the city, had microwave meals growing up as a kid. And so he, you know, his idea of the food system was very different than mine. You know, I grew up in North Georgia, North Alabama, and South Tennessee with relatives. And I would spend summers on my grandparents' farm, and my grandmother would take us out there and teach us how to, the proper way to pick okra from the plant. And then my grandfather would take us out and ride mules and move cows around. And we'd go to the farmer's market and interact with customers like, hey, my corn's better than the guy next to me's corn. And let me tell you why. Yeah. So that was my experience. But I had never taken a finance class a day in my life. And so Chris being an avid investor and me being a guy that knows how to speak a little country in my voice, we became, you know, a great team to talk to both the investor community and the ag community. So that background definitely, both of our backgrounds definitely helped us kind of paint what Harvest Returns is all about to our duo customer base.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's really exciting. I can imagine that the learning curve going into, as you mentioned, with all the new types of technology and all the new types of operations that are coming out, that was quite an adjustment for you guys.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, and I wish, you know, every young person got the opportunity. Both of us military veterans, we saw a lot of the world that most, at least the most Americans, don't get to see. And we see the food system and emerging markets and the developing parts of the world where agriculture is such, it's such more a part of the daily routine of your normal citizen, as opposed to the United States, where we always laugh at the statistic, which I guess is true, that 8% of people think that chocolate milk comes from brown cows. And you know, I say that kind of jokingly, but also in a sad way, that there are people that actually think that, and that's unfortunate. And Chris and I have been to parts of the world where our experience with the locals informed us of how much more in tune other parts of the world are with their food system. And so there's that we, you know, we bring that to our company as well, as, you know, not just the whatever degrees that we're sitting on, but that world experience is what really helped us to understand, like, hey, this means something. And you know, there are parts of America that are, I mean, COVID was a great example of parts of America that woke up to, wait a minute, I need to understand why, you know, this food is not really available right now. And I need, you know, our company did exceptionally well during the COVID timeframe because of people started to, like, wait, I need to pay attention to this. And then the phone started ringing and the emails started coming in, and people were like, I need to invest in the food system. And we said, oh, interesting. I just happen to have a lot of deals that, you know, that you'd be interested in. And so I think that, you know, that background has really helped us shape the company and shape our team.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective. And I've always been interested in how the agricultural literacy looks in other countries compared to us, because we are notorious for being one of, if not the top agricultural producers in the world, and yet we're one of the least agriculturally literate countries in the world. And I think that there's something to say about that. But no, I think that's really interesting that you guys are able to bring that perspective from your experiences in other countries to your company, and being able to kind of prioritize the need for investment in food production. And it doesn't surprise me at all, like you said, that the people were wanting to invest more around COVID times, because that was kind of, in my experience, that was kind of the point where everyone started to realize the need to understand food production. On my show, at least, we had a ton of people that were wanting to come on and, you know, ask questions and talk about it, and were wanting to start their own gardens, and were wanting to, you know, contact farmers and get a hold of them and figure out how they can help. And there was a huge surge of people finally caring about agricultural production, which was great on our end, but it was a little bit, you know, it's like, took you long enough. But yeah, that's really exciting to hear. So from the other point of view, have you guys gotten a lot of feedback from people in the agriculture industry, and what's that looked like?
So when we started the company, we, in our minds, we thought, okay, there's investors out there and they're looking for deals. There's money out there. That'll be the easy part. We'll spend a little money marketing, but it'll just show up in truckloads. The sponsor, we call them sponsors, the farmer side, you know, whoever's sponsoring the deal, the sponsor side, man, this is new. Farmers aren't really known for, you know, trying new stuff. That they usually just stick to whatever their great 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 grandfather started with. It's going to be tough. But once we got going and we started to get our name out there, we quickly found the opposite to be true. We just started, you know, reaching out to different social media channels and different ways of, like, get in front of ag business owners. And once they found out that, hey, here's a new way to bring in capital to our operation, they came running. And I mean, in truckloads, they came running. And so quickly we developed a deal pipeline that was overwhelming. And so and it's consistent to today. I mean, for the past 6 years, our deal pipeline is so much larger than our investor pipeline, that we are consistently just trying to bring as many investors, educate people into the system. So the ag side of the coin has had a very positive, overwhelming response to this. We thought it would be a lot harder. It turns out, you know, there are quite a few business savvy ag business owners out there, whether they're in the tech space or in the production space, and they are looking for that capital. They're trying to meet customers' demands, and they need the capital to do so. Banks, you know, the old traditional banks are not having the level of agility and flexibility to understand what these farmers are trying to do in their way of evolution and innovation. And so when those farmers see another pathway to that capital, they become very open to it. So we, you know, the perfect lesson learned, like I described before, is, you know, I call it the canoe problem. Like our the side of the canoe with the deals and the side of the canoe with the investors, it's like the canoe's upside down because the deal's just so much heavier. And that's not just the United States, that's worldwide. We talk to farmers, Europe, Africa, Asia, and we've done deals in Canada, Central America, West Africa, most of them in the United States. But yeah, it's the word's out there. And so it's just, you know, a matter of churning through the deals, doing the due diligence on them, and finding the investors that want to play in that space.
Now, do you think that there's such a disparity between those two groups because there are just so many people that need financial support, or is it because we don't have enough people that are willing to invest into those programs, or is it a little bit of both?
It's a layered question. So, no, it's, you know, for the benefit of everyone listening, you know, so on the ag side of things, absolutely. Our food production systems have to innovate to meet a ever-growing population. That's just, I mean, it's hard to argue against that. More people need more food, less land available. Production processes have to get better. To do that, that's expensive. If you do any process faster with more results, that means you put a lot of money and effort into it somehow. And so that, I mean, that's just facts. So you've got to be able to produce more with fewer land resources. And so you've got to, you know, innovate your processes. You've got to bring in better equipment. You've got to hire better staff. You've got to do so many to make that happen. We mentioned COVID before. There's in human history, there's always this trend to whatever process is going on out there to centralize things, especially in the logistical world where, hey, if we put this giant meatpacking facility here, it can service the six states around it. And that reduces cost and that reduces clutter. And then someone actually gets very wealthy. Well, then you have some kind of thing like a pandemic, or let's say it was a tornado or whatever kind of, you know, natural thing out there that shuts down that one meatpacking house. Now six states are without meat on the shelves. If they had six smaller meat production facilities in six states, then if one or two got hit, the others could cover down. And so we naturally centralize things, whether it be food logistics or government or whatever process you're into. And then something catastrophic happens and we all run to, oh, we got to decentralize. And then we'll do that. And we'll put, you know, different nodes out there and spread them out. And then over time, like, man, this is really expensive. I think we need to centralize again, and we'll go right back. I mean, that's just human history. And so, food processing, food logistics, everyone is in that phase right now where, hey, let's decentralize again. Let's put hydroponic lettuce or aquaponic cantaloupes right in the heart of the city, so it's near all the people that are eating it. Like, hey, that's cool. But when you're a farmer and you're paying Manhattan real estate prices just so you can sell tomatoes to people, well, guess what? Those tomatoes are going to be $20 a pop. And so there's a lack of understanding in that, you know, at the, you know, people going to grocery stores like, man, why is this egg so much more expensive? Why is this, name of produce? Why is this meat so much more expensive? It's like, well, you're asking for this quality and you're asking for this stems from, you know, from the farm to the table, but you're not understanding like the logistics of that. And so a lot of learning going on there, a lot of, you know, again, human cycles going on there to try to understand, like, how do we push this money in the right projects going?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure, like you mentioned, it's a very complex issue depending on where you're at and what you're dealing with. But that's no, it's really interesting. Shifting gears a little bit, like I mentioned earlier, I did get a chance to look at your website and kind of read through, you know, your mission statement and a lot of the values and goals of everything. And just side note, the website is beautiful, by the way. It's very well designed. It's very easy, very user friendly. It's you know, you find the offerings right on the front page, all the success stories. I like seeing all of those, the operations they got, you know, well over what they were asking for. All that's really nice to see. But under your guys's company values, the first one listed is, it really caught my eye. It was sustain the planet by supporting farmers. And I think that what you're talking about just now, that, you know, that level of complexity when it comes to the food production system, a lot of people don't realize what supporting farmers looks like. And, you know, in your guys' case, obviously that's financial, but sometimes it's just, you know, getting out of the way some of the time. It's just not, you know, whether it be voting or purchasing or just having a level of understanding of the food production system in a way that benefits the people that are behind that whole system. I think that a lot of people are often blind to what it takes to support farmers and what it takes to get them what they need. But I love that idea of sustaining the planet by supporting farmers, just because, you know, we hear so much about how often farmers and agriculture get blamed for all the damage to the planet and all the systems that are messed up and everything. But in reality, they are the solution to it if we just give them the right tools to, you know, to be that solution. I don't know if you have anything to say on that. I just wanted to highlight how much I like that idea.
No, we like I said, Chris and I have seen parts of the world that can, you know, will keep other people up at night. You know, there's definitely troubles out there. And does America have it all right? Absolutely not. But I can assure anyone listening that if you think it's bad here, let me take you on some trips to some places around the world and show you what bad looks like. We certainly don't have it all right here. We certainly don't have the best as far as you know, sustaining the planet practices. But the dang, you know, it's better here than other places. So we appreciate the fact that it doesn't make sense to keep producing food in a way that will destroy the soil that you can't produce, you know, in 5 or 6 years. You cannot think in these election cycles like that. And that's kind of, you know, our TV has helped us do that. Our internet has helped us do that, where we think, we'll just make it to the next election. And if you continue to think like that, like, we will all starve to death in no time. And so you got to think long range, you got to think long term. Farmers want to do those practices. And you're right that, you know, there's some folks out there that would like to demonize some of the farming practices out there, but farmers will do what they have to do to sell you their product. And so if you want the chicken to be pasture raised before it lays its egg, like that, the farmer will do that. However, you got to understand that costs money. And so just to transition a, you know, kind of a conventional farm to say an organic farm, or to transition a cattle operation to kind of feedlot grain finishing to a grass finishing operation, that costs money. And so if you are the customer that wants that kind of product, then pay those kind of prices. But also, why not invest in the business that's going to do the thing that you're asking it to do? Because farmers are very good at, you know, doing what they're asked to do. Produce food in this way. Okay, I'll do that. But you need to help us with the actual financing of, and you can't just expect it to happen. With most of the farms, most of the ones that we work with, being these small to medium family owned kind of, they're not backed by some major conglomerate, you know, the Tyson or JBS or Cargill, something like that. They're probably selling to those big names. But it's up to them to figure it out. It's up to them to produce the thing that those big distributors are going to package up and put on the grocery store shelves. So the investor / consumer, you know, could benefit from educating themselves on how food is produced, how it's paid for, where does the money go, with farmers only getting a cut of the dollar, you know, from when their product is sold to the consumer, that and they're putting the most at risk and doing a lot of the at-risk work, you know, that bothers me. Same with Chris, like we want the farmer and the rancher and the ag business owner to be successful, because they're going to keep us alive. They're going to keep innovating their processes until, you know, there's parts of the planet that can't sustain crops anymore. That the farmers are the ones that are going to figure it out and keep feeding us. And so we definitely want farmers to be empowered to make the right decisions on taking care of their property that's been handed down year after generation. So you hit it right on the head. That's one of our main values. It's first and foremost.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And I like that idea that you just proposed, which is, you know, people always ask for farmers and for those in agriculture to produce things a particular way, but they never help with that process. You know, there's never the other side of the coin, which is, you know, if you're asking for this product, then what are you willing to put in to make sure it's done correctly? They just like to ask for it, which I'm by no means criticizing consumers. You know, most of my guests on the show are people who don't come from ag backgrounds, but I've learned from having those conversations that, like you mentioned, people don't often realize the amount of work that goes into producing food in very particular styles, and they don't often realize even the process that food goes through to get to their grocery stores and their plates. That's kind of the essential goal of this whole podcast, is to try to make sure people are more aware of that. And that's actually what I'm hoping this episode is able to do, is not just get you guys some more support and some more people on your platform, but to demonstrate to my audience what investing in agriculture really looks like, whether it be financially or just in some capacity supporting those who are producing their food and being more aware of that process overall. I think you guys are doing a great job in terms of benefiting and supporting the future of agriculture. But that being said, what you guys have made an effort to streamline one of the more difficult processes of agriculture, which is finding funding and financial support for a lot of those operations, which again, side note, people often don't realize that a lot of those operations are family run. And even if they're larger operations, they're still localized operations that are not being run by massive corporations and factory farms like everyone seems to think. You guys have done quite a good job of streamlining a lot of that difficulty in terms of getting them financial support. Do you guys see streamlining other agricultural processes becoming a more common trend in the agriculture industry?
Yeah, so how it's caged in your question, what I've just personally noticed, whether you're a farmer, an electrician, a plumber, a mechanic, if you're good at what you do, you are the talent, which means you are the one that can go on a job site, you know, fix that junction box if you're an electrician, or you're the one that can go to a job site and, you know, fix that leak if you're a plumber. Same with the farmer, like you are the one that knows, you can read the signs, you can do the research, you can monitor your sensors, and you understand how that plant or that animal needs to grow. And where. So you are the talent. The part that you're lacking is the business side of it. You know, and farms that we've seen, you know, countless areas, typically it's the farmer's spouse that is the accountant, the bookkeeper, human resources, you name it, the business side of it. And so there are plenty that have cracked the code and figured out how to manage that. But I always challenge farmers, like you've got to know what you're good at, and you've got to know what you're not good at. And you've got to find those team members, whether that's a family member or, you know, hiring someone outside of the family to do it. So I challenge farmers to look in that direction of, like, you've got the farming down and you're showing it with your track record and everything. Let's work with you to make sure the business side of your business is healthy, and don't let something like receipts and a call from the IRS or something like that be the thing that brings you down and puts your family at risk and your farm at risk. And so for investors and for companies like ours that are bringing investors and talking with a farmer, that's absolutely one of the things that we try to, one of the intangibles we try to bring into the equation is like, hey, look, if you need help marketing your product, if you need help, you know, finding the right accounting software, you know, goodness, just let us know, like inform us and let us help you. Like if you do well, we do well. And the investor does well. So we're going to do what it takes to make sure you do well. So refining any of the processes, the farmers that we talked to are already innovating their actual growing process or their raising product, whatever. They've got to innovate the business side of their business. You know, the bookkeeping, got to understand your accounts receivable, and you got to understand what forms the IRS is asking you for, what things the USDA needs from you to certify your farm organic or something like that. That's where the innovation needs to continue in the finance world, but also, you know, the bigger parts of the business.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think that's a great idea. I hope that as time continues, we have more people like you and like Chris that see some of those issues and try to mitigate some of that concern and stress for those farmers. So that being said, I know we're starting to get closer to the end of our time here. What's next for Harvest Returns? Where are you guys hoping to go in the future?
Yeah, great question. So we feel comfortable in the processes that we're doing now as we raise capital and inside the confines and constraints of the securities laws that we operate in. We look to see where other sources of capital may come from. We typically deal with investors that are putting $5,000, $10,000, and $25,000 in, you know, just diversifying their own personal portfolios. So we're out there looking for the bigger check writers. You know, how can we take our track record with these small to medium farms? How can I go to the bigger check writers, say family offices, institutional money, pension funds, you name it, and say, hey, look, we've got a great deal flow. We've got some great farmers that we've already invested in and we want to invest more. Let's do it now with a bigger punch. Let's do it now at a scale that we can really start making some serious impact with these farmers and do it with some check sizes that, you know, will keep them successful and won't undercapitalize. I mean, one of the worst things a company can do is be undercapitalized when it takes off. I mean, you're trying to fly to the moon with only a quarter tank of gas and you are going to have problems. So why not become something that can fully fill that fuel tank and get those rocket ships off the earth? And so that Harvest Returns, we think that is as our future, and we've already started to make some moves to be able to bring a bigger gun to the gunfighter, you know, as I say. So we're making those steps. We've hired some staff in the last year, and we're looking for some more in the years to come. And we're gonna keep growing, but not too rapidly. We're gonna grow in a healthy way, in a sustainable way, and we're gonna make a huge impact in the ag community, United States and abroad. By connecting investors to their food source.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck in that. And I have one more question for you. If anyone is wanting to invest or is wanting to support farmers through your program, what would they have to do? Where do they go for that?
Simple and easy. I mean, you go to www.harvestreturns.com, read all our cool stuff. Just like you said, we got some cool success stories. If you want to look into some of the deals that we have available, just basically sign up. It takes an email and you create the password and then you just start the journey there. And we have tried to make that process as painless and as transparent as possible so that investors feel comfortable through the whole thing. So yeah, literally just kind of sign up, go to the platform and just start shopping. And we are ready to answer any questions and connect anyone directly to the, let them ask questions anytime.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I will make sure that all those links are down in the description so people are able to go check that out. But that's all the questions I have for you. Do you have anything else you want to tack on there? Any questions or anything else you want to share?
No, I appreciate you having me, Brandon. We love communicating with listeners out there that are interested in the ag space as a investment class, or even just, you know, interested in it as far as knowing where their food comes from, and be here and look forward to the future.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Thank you so much, Austin, for coming on. Before I close everything out, do you have anything else you want to plug? Any social media, anything like that? Or
yeah, we're on all the social media, so definitely look us up there. And you can see, you know, not just us, but see the companies that we've partnered with. And I tell you, there's some farmers out there that are selling direct to customer. You can order stuff online. Mm-hmm. Stuff will show up on your doorstep. So yeah, I mean, I could plug 50 different companies and what they'll sell to you, but, no, we appreciate when our investors and our list, get on there and shop with the companies that we've invested with.
Awesome. Well, yeah, once again, I'll make sure all that is down in the description so they can go check you out and make sure that they give you some support so you can go and continue supporting our food and fiber system. But that's all I have. So thank you so much, Austin, for joining me. It was a pleasure. And thank you all for listening and for tuning in. I hope to catch you all next week. And don't forget, if you ate today, thank a farmer. And that's the episode. So big thanks again to Austin for being such a great guest and giving us such great insight into how Harvest Returns works and how this company came to be in the first place. I think this is a great company that's definitely worth supporting. And I know a lot of my listeners here definitely want to support agriculture in more ways than just listening to this podcast. So if this is a potential outlet for you, then I would definitely recommend going through them to make sure you can get some support to those farmers who are hard at work, making sure that your food is safe and is plentiful. But that being said, thank you so much, Austin. I'm going to put all the links down in the description so you guys can check out Harvest Returns and learn more about the company, learn more about how you can support agriculture. And I'm excited to see where they go in the future. I know they're talking about some other projects they're working on that I may be able to potentially tap into and show off to you guys. So I hope that I can do that soon. But wherever they may go, I think that we're starting to see a lot of more external supporting companies coming into supporting these agricultural operations, which makes me very excited, as I'm sure you all know. But once again, make sure that you like, comment, subscribe, follow, do all the things. And I hate saying all that, but you know, I have to. And make sure you share not just with your friends online, but your friends in and around your home as well. And so that all being taken care of, I hope to catch all you next week. And don't forget, if you ate today, thank a farmer.